Okay. Now, what's the evidence of today that we published in our study? First of all, let me just take one step before that to say there are two meta-analyses in the literature in the early 1990s who did study the risk in women prior to age 45 or 50. And one found a 42% risk, and one found a 72% risk. What about today's studies? This is after 10 to 15 years of work. It took a lot of work to get this in with researchers from Penn State and the University of Pittsburgh. This was published in the Mayo Clinic Proceedings. And there's the title of our article, Oral Contraceptive Use as a Risk Factor for Premenopausal Breast Cancer. You really can't study the risk of the pill, especially if you take it before you've had children, in women who are 70 and 80. The only data we have now are women before age 50. So that's all we can study. In another 10 or 20 years, we can look at postmenopausal breast cancer. But here's what we found. 21 out of 23 studies, these are retrospective studies, the bulk of whose data comes after 1980. What we did in our meta-analysis is where we pulled all the data together. We didn't want women from the 1960s and 1970s because, as I said before, a woman in the 1960s and 70s, that's not really fair because it's going to weigh down the data, or it's going to water it down because they're not going to have developed breast cancer. They took it there's not enough of a latent period. So 21 out of 23 studies show risk if you take it before you've had a child. This is a little technical, not the greatest visual, but these are called odds ratios. And if you have no risk, it comes out to 1.0. And this is a logarithmic scale down here. So 2 risk is double the risk. And these are all the studies up here. And if you count them, there should be 23 studies. And you can see that only two, are under 1. So 21 out of 23 studies show an increased risk if you take the pill before you've had children. This little guy up here is the overall summation of all these dots, and it comes out to a 1.44 increased risk. When these lines, these are called confidence intervals, these lines, if they're to the right of this line, it means it's statistically significant. So you can see a number of these studies. Boom, boom. At least 7 or 8 are statistically significant. Can you read the numbers from back there? It's a little difficult, but this is a graphic that shows the increased risk of all the studies. And this is a little bit easier to read, I think. And you can see there's only 2 negative studies. And if I just read a few of these, the increased risk, 42%, 17, 33, 66, 65, 91, 10, 105. So you get an idea. This is almost a 200% increased risk. I mean, if you were a jury and you had to decide something and you saw 21 out of 23 studies and I started reading these numbers, you'd wonder why a woman didn't hear about this information. As I said, if you pull the data, it comes to a 44% increased risk. This is the odds ratio. It's called 1.44. And it's statistically significant at the 99% confidence interval. That just means that usually it's 95%, but we took it to a higher level in the sense that we wanted to be very conservative. And when you say something's statistically significant at this level, it means 99 times out of 100, this result is not due to chance, and it lies somewhere between these two numbers. So this 21 out of 23 studies is about as solid as you'll get, I think, for most medical risk factors. These are the results for Paris women who've had children, and you can see that if you've ever used the pill, 14 out of 14 studies were positive, a 29% risk. If you use the pill before you've had a child, 21 out of 23 studies were positive, 44% increased risk. If you use the pill after you've had a child, 14 out of 14 studies were positive, 15% risk. And if you use the pill for 4 years or more before you've had a child, 9 out of 10 studies are positive, but there's a 52% risk. And I don't know how it is in Canada, but in the United States, often women use the pill for 10, 15, sometimes 20 years. This number could easily be 60, 70, 80, 90%, but we couldn't get the data for that. If this is the pool data from our study, just to put it in bar graph form, and you can see that here is the percent increase risk. This is all the world literature. And you can see that if women take the pill before they've had a child for 4 years, it goes up to 52%. And this should be 44%. What about women who've never had children? 8 out of 12 studies show if they ever took the pill, there's about a 24% risk. If they take it for longer, 29%, not much increased, not much difference between them. So that's the world literature. And let me just show you a couple of statistics for Canada and just three things to address. First of all, you know, with a controversial study like this, there's going to be some critiques. And let me address the three most common critiques. The first one you've already heard about, people will say, well, you know what, it's really not that important of a study because these are only premenopausal women. Well, 20% of women get breast cancer before the age of 50, so that's 1 out of 5. And the rate in the United States, I think, is similar to Canada. It's 2% of all women under 50 get breast cancer. Now, if you take a 40 or 50% increased risk, that might bring it to about 3%. So an extra 1 in 100 women will develop breast cancer. And in medicine, they say that's a small risk. But if you're that 1 in 100 woman, that's an infinite risk for you. Okay, so it's not that rare. The second thing is Oxford said the risk of breast cancer falls to normal after 10 years, the Oxford pooled analysis. But as we saw, the Oxford study had 4 major problems, and you can't say the risk goes to normal after 10 years if you start looking at women who took the pill before they've had children, because they never looked at that. So there's no data to say that it falls to normal. It probably doesn't. We showed that in our paper. And they say a pooled analysis needs to be done. I'm not a statistician, but we've had very good statisticians from the University of Pittsburgh. And a pooled analysis basically is slightly different statistically, where you're getting the data for every individual woman. What we did is we pooled the data from 21 out of from 23 studies. I don't think there'd be any real difference, but I have no problem if they apply this criteria to our study. So the argument often is that what about the overall risk of cancer from the birth control pill? Birth control pills are known to increase the risk of breast, cervical, and liver cancer, but they protect against the uterine and ovarian cancer. So what's the net effect? For the United States, in 2006, the estimate was about 213,000 women got breast cancer, about 41,000 died, and the statistics for cervical, uterine, and ovarian cancer. If we make a conservative, this is very conservative, and this is crude, and a lot of assumptions, so this is just kind of to give people an idea. If we say the risk of the pill, cumulative morbidity of the use of oral contraceptive pill prior to first-term pregnancy. So our study showed a 44% increased risk. Let's just say the pill were to increase the risk of breast cancer 40%. Then if you extrapolated those numbers, you'd get 85,000 new cases of breast cancer. For cervical cancer, conservative again, the birth control pill increases the risk, probably a lot more than that. You'd get 3,884. For ovarian cancer and uterine cancer, the pill causes a 50% decreased risk. My own reading of the literature shows that drops markedly after about 20 years. It doesn't protect you by 50%, but let's just assume it does. And if you total those numbers, you would get a total excess of about 58,000 women getting breast cancer, total cancer from the birth control pill. You do the same thing for mortality, the deaths, and you're going to come up with about 6,538 women dying every year. What about for Canada? You have basically 10% of our statistics, 22,300 women estimated to die in 2007. These estimates can be way off, by the way. So this is just an estimate. The U.S., the same thing, they can be way off. The number of deaths, about 5,000, a little over. Do the same math, and you come up with an extra over 6,000 women developing some type of cancer, and over 1,000 women dying because of the birth control pill. God bless you. So, conclusion. Use of oral contraceptives, especially at an early age, is contributing to an increased risk of cancer in women, which may increase as the latent period increases. Doctors need to become aware of this data, and women are entitled to it. If you'd like to read, you have the article, but if anybody, patients, or anyone else would ever like to read it, the Mayo Clinic is nice enough to put it on their website, mayoclinicproceedings.com. And you just click under Archives to October 2006. And I'll go back to this slide so you can write it down. So now, it's time for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kallenborn. We are going to take questions now. So if you have a question, think it over. I can begin with a question of my own. I will mention that the talk is going to be repeated tomorrow night at the Laurentian Leadership Center. The address and information are on our website, imfcanada.org. So if you have any questions from the floor, I find it really, the talk to be really interesting given that I am your cohort. And I wondered if you could just explain a bit better why it is that women, or maybe the obstetrician and the Society of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, is reticent to this information. Are they just pressed for time? I'm just wondering. I haven't heard it from my doctor, and I wonder other women on the floor, maybe they can, if they're comfortable, comment as well. But
Yes, the Society of, I think it's Obstetricians and Gynecologists of Canada. I was just reading in some papers that Andrea gave me prior to this talk, have said that the additional risk of breast cancer is about 1 in 10,000. Of course, I'm saying today it's a lot higher than that, closer to 1 in 100. Unfortunately, on their website, they misquoted our study, and they attribute information that comes from an older study from Oxford to our study. So they made a mistake there. They're quoting the old study from Oxford, which says 1 in 10,000. It's actually likely a lot higher than that. As to why women really don't hear about this, I think the human nature of any profession is if you prescribe the birth control pill, especially for 10 or 20 years, you're going to have a hard time, and you're going to want to rationalize. You know, nobody wants to hurt women. Nobody wants to say we made a mistake. But sometimes you have to do that. With hormone replacement, I know that going through my residency and going through the years, for years they kept saying it's good for your heart, you know, post-menopausal hormone replacement. I don't know if you heard this in Canada, but in the U.S., it's great for your heart, it's great for your bones, and don't worry about breast cancer. And now what we find is it's great for your bones. You do have to worry about your heart, especially if you've had heart disease, and it increases breast cancer. And finally, when these big studies came out, gynecologists were forced to start telling their patients, and so were family practitioners. And hopefully, with this kind of information, you know, women will get informed consent. But as to why they don't do it, it could be a combination of prescribing and being very, there's inertia in medicine like there is anywhere else. And of course, there's a lot of money in the birth control pill, a lot of politics and drug companies. So there are many, many reasons, but for sure, at least in my view, women have not heard about this study in the U.S. Maybe they have in Canada, but not in the United States. Very few women have heard about it.
Are there any questions from the floor?
Yes, sir. I'm not a woman, but Dr. Calabar, thanks for coming with the with this presentation. And it's refreshing to have a little bit of an honest discussion of the issue. Sometimes it seems that these perspectives are not that well heard. But just based on what you said, the statistics are about 22,300 being diagnosed a year in Canada. About 5,300, I think I put down there, that die every year. It'll be about 223 women every year in Canada being diagnosed with a condition that could take their life. And most of us would consider that a significant risk. I just wonder that in your study there, I mean, there's some studies get particularly favorable funding from certain interest groups. I wonder how your study was funded. Did you have some funding from the pharmaceutical companies for your study?
No, we were received basically no funding. Everybody did this on their own time. There is a caveat that two of the researchers from the University of Pittsburgh get grants from the National Cancer Institute, and so we put that into the paper. But there's no drug money, and certainly most drug companies wouldn't want to fund this study. Other questions? Or?
Did you come across anything about age, the age of the woman, teenagers in particular, the age at which you start using this?
Well, basically, over the years, women used to take the birth control pill for a few months, maybe at the most, in the 1960s and 70s, and often they would take it for maybe a year after they had their third or fourth baby. Today, women are taking it sometimes 10, sometimes 20 years before they've had their first baby. So the whole epidemiology of use of the birth control pill has shifted. And that's why the focus of this study, or a lot of it, was on use before first full-term pregnancy. As far as a more narrow breakdown, you can't really do that, because when you're taking 23 studies, all they do is they look at overall risk. They look at risk prior to first-term pregnancy and after. And you can't, if one study says, well, we'll look at the risk of a woman who started before age 14, before age 16, before age 18, if you want to pool the data, you have to take similar parameters. So we can only say that the risk is increased if you take it before your first-term pregnancy. We can't break it down further. Yeah, that's a good question. I'm sorry, what was the last one?
Would you categorize that as having a bigger?
Probably more. What happens is that in the birth control pill, remember that study where I showed that the rate of breast cell division goes up? Okay. In the birth control pill, it's probably the progestin that makes the breast cells divide more rapidly. The progestin's probably the bigger culprit in causing breast cancer. And so Depo-Provera is a type of artificial progestin, and a gentleman named Skegg, S-K-E-G-G, found that he pooled two large studies, and that the risk of breast cancer was increased by about 190 in women who took Depo-Provera for 2 years or more, that's 8 shots, you get it every 3 months, 2 years or more prior to the age of 25. So just like, it's a similar trend with post-hormone replacement, post-menopausal hormone replacement. If you add the progestin or the Provera, then your risk of breast cancer goes way up. If you just give women Premarin, it really doesn't go up much at all. And with the birth control pill, it's probably the progestin component. So the shots people are getting, the Norplant, the progestin that's an IUD, it's probably much higher than the birth control pill.
Maybe beyond the scope of what you were studying, but is that one point you mentioned, artificial hormones, do you know if there's any difference, or is the reality of natural hormonal, in any of what you studied, is natural hormone any different than?
Well, some women, for example, take progesterone, natural progesterone, and progesterone will make the rate of breast cell division increase. But I don't know, I think the synthetic progestins are much more potent at our worst, but I can't really compare. But just because it's natural, there are women who take progesterone for everything, for hot flashes, for menopause, and things like that. And you have to watch it. If you start dumping, you know, 10 years of that stuff into your body and you start at age 50, just because it's natural doesn't mean it's good for you. So you have to be a little careful there, too.
Did you just say that it was worse with the natural?
No, I'm saying I'm saying just because it says natural doesn't mean that it's safe. But that I don't know the studies comparing to synthetic. I think synthetic's a little bit worse, but I don't have good data on that. So if you take natural progesterone for 10 years, let's say after age 50, which I know there's a lot of women are doing the natural type progesterone, I don't think that's guaranteed to be safe. I think you have to be a little careful with that.
I don't know what the bells mean, but we will finish up unless there's more questions. So I would like to thank you all for coming. And again, if you would like more information, our website is imfcanada.org. And the same talk will be repeated tomorrow in case you really want to hear it again, or if there are others who couldn't make it today. So I would just like to thank Dr. Kellenborg for coming and explaining this information in such a clear to understand way. And thank all of you and Pat Davidson once again for coming and giving us some of your time. Thanks very much.